What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
So on this edition of Into the Fray, I have on with me Travis Watson, who writes under W.T. Watson. So if you're looking for him, look it up that way, guys. He is an author and researcher out of Canada. And Travis, we've been in contact really for a very long time, and you are actually now one of our published, twice published now, authors at Beyond the Fray Publishing. Now, Travis's first book with us is a fictional work titled Hunting the Beast, but today we are discussing his newly released nonfiction work, which is titled Phantom Black Dogs, Walkers of the Liminal Way, and that is available right now where fine books are sold. Now, Travis, first of all, welcome, and second, I'm excited for this one because I am not heavily read and researched in the way of Phantom Black Dog. So I'm looking forward to learning a whole bunch this morning.
Well, first of all, Shannon, thank you very much for having me on the show. I've been a fan for a long time. As you say, we've had periodic correspondence throughout probably the time that you've been doing the show. So I'm really happy to be here today. You know, the Phantom Black Dog thing actually started, as you say, with my fictional novel, Hunting Beast. I was looking around for a topic that really hadn't been done in the world of urban fantasy. You know, and everybody's doing werewolves, and they're doing vampires, and they're doing the fae, and all that sort of thing. I wanted something different. And I happened to be one of those people who is, things that go bump in the night nerd. Mm-hmm. And have been for years and years and years. And I was reading, I think it was Alien Animals by the Boards, Janet and Colin Board. And I came across this whole chapter about these black dog apparitions. The black dog is actually an apparition. It's something that appears to people in their, you know, in their various states. You know, it's a large, it's usually seen as a very large black dog, often with glowing eyes, and we're talking self-illuminating eyes. The interesting thing about these guys is that they appear and disappear at will. And, you know, there's a whole ton of high strangeness that's attached to the dog, its appearance, and so forth. So I saw this article and I was thinking to myself, wow, that's kind of cool. I want to learn some more about that. So I started doing some research about the black dog, and I came across it's really a legend, a story in which a black dog actually shapeshifted into a human being and back. And I was like, oh, what a cool idea. So that was the impetus for Hunting the Beast, which is my fictional work. And that went off in a whole other direction. But as I was doing the research for this, I was thinking to myself, wow, there's a lot of information on this. And there, you know, I've seen things about black dogs on blogs and things periodically, but I haven't seen, and I know now that there are some books about the subject out there, but there didn't seem to be a whole lot of work available about this particular apparition. So I thought, you know, it would be really cool to write a book about this. And we were talking after Hunting the Beast came out, and you were like, oh, wow, I'd really like to see a nonfiction work on this. And so here we are. I think that I was probably destined to write this book because I actually was born on October 1st. And I found out in my research that October 1st is actually National Black Dog Day.
Okay, that is very strange, and I didn't know that fact. That is cool.
Black dogs actually have trouble getting adopted from rescues, pounds, and so forth. So they actually have a National Black Dog Day where they, you know, highlight or feature the black dogs and the black cats that are available for adoption. So I thought that was really cool too.
That's a shame about the black dogs and kitties not getting adopted because of the superstitious nature of the whole thing, right?
Well, yeah, I tell a story in the intro to the book. I had a black dog. She was a border collie lab mix who ended up doing search and rescue, agility, you know, all kinds of dog things. But Echo would sometimes, most of the time, people would be just fine with her. But sometimes I would notice that people would be a little standoffish with my dog, and I couldn't figure this out. And it took a real turn when I was living in Alpharetta, Georgia, and I had a neighbor in the apartment where I lived that I would come out the door with Echo, and this woman would practically shriek and run back into her apartment and lock the door. I could not for the life of me figure out what the problem was. You know, I mean, Echo was a friendly dog. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't like a pit bull or something that would intimidate people. She was about 50 pounds. She wasn't overly large. I couldn't figure out what the issue was. I thought maybe this individual was just afraid of dogs. Turns out that in this person's culture, there are jinn. Which are a subject that I'm sure ITF listeners are familiar with. And one of the favorite forms for the jinn when they manifest in our world is a black dog. So people of that particular culture are scared to death of black dogs because they're afraid that they're going to be cursed by the jinn or have a situation where this jinn begins to influence their life. So I came to a understanding with my neighbor that, you know, if I came out and she was there, then, you know, I would go back in until she had a chance to withdraw so she didn't have to interact with my dog.
If you even read on the periphery about jinn, and that is mm-hmm. your, you know, if you really believe in those things and the things that you need to do to avoid them, they are terrifying entities. And I can't blame the woman for running back in if that was her belief.
And the jinn, if you have read things like Leveling's Legends of the Fire Spirits and things like that, the jinn are, in Islamic culture are kind of like people. There are good jinn and there are bad jinn. And you see the same thing. The Scots had the same kind of derivation for their fairy. They had a Seelie court, which were the fairy that would interact with human beings. And then they had an Unseelie court, which was a group of fairy that hated human beings. And this is where you get all those stories about people being pixie led and all kinds of other horrible things, selkies, drowning people and all that sort of stuff. But these beings are yes, they're extremely powerful, and some of them are hostile to humans. And that's just, something that we kind of have to keep in mind when we're looking at these kinds of issues.
Now, since you mentioned good jinn and bad jinn, something I'm wondering about with phantom black dogs, because when you, on the onset, think of a phantom black dog, you think of a harbinger of doom, and it's not good to see one, and it's all of these things. Is there any positivity in seeing a phantom black dog? Did you come across any reports of something good coming out of it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the things that comes across in my book is that I'm really not happy with the idea of the phantom black dog as a hellhound or a devil dog or, any of these kind of pejorative terms that people use about the dogs. The phantom black dog is an apparition. Yes, it is sometimes associated with being a death omen. Ivan Bunn, who's a folklorist from England, did a kind of an informal survey of black dog witnesses and that he had talked to. And in something like 20% of the cases that he reviewed, the individual had a death in the family or actually died themselves sometime soon after seeing the black dog. So there's obviously something to that death portent thing. But what most people don't realize is that there's a long, long history of the phantom black dog as a guardian, and specifically a guardian of roadsides. And I cover a number of stories in the book about, so the standard setup would be this. You have a young lady typically who is walking from point A to point B in England, say. There's also a story from Canada where the same thing happens. It's dark, or it grows dark. Usually the story goes that this young person has unfortunately been held at their place a little longer than they intended, and it gets dark or it's getting dusky as they're walking back to their home. And oftentimes this dog will simply manifest. And often when the dog manifests in its guardian form, you don't get the glowing eyes. It'll just look like an ordinary dog. And the individual will be like, oh, well, look, there's a dog there. How nice. And the dog will walk along with them for a certain distance. And this is one of the primary things that we see over and over and over again in black dog lore, is the dog seems to have a territory or a specific area that it patrols, for want of a better word. And it will walk with the person who sees it for a particular period of time or distance, and then it disappears, which is, of course, what puts everybody on the know that it's not an ordinary dog. It'll walk into a wall, it'll walk into a tree, or it'll just vanish. What makes these stories even more interesting, though, is that oftentimes you'll have a situation where this young lady often, will encounter ruffians just after they encounter this dog, which is walking along next to them. And the dog will dissuade these people from interfering with this person at all. There's literally Ethel Rudkin, who is probably the seminal work for black dogs. She wrote a folklore article back in the 20s, if I'm not mistaken, collected stories from her native area of Lincolnshire, and came to the conclusion that basically the black dog was a protective apparition that appeared along roadsides. Now, that was true in her area. In other areas of England, for instance, the Norfolk area of England, the black dog has a much shadier reputation. They call it black shuck there. And it's often seen as a portent of doom or whatever. But yeah, there's definitely a long history of the black dog as a guardian entity taking care of people. There's even a story of a black dog preventing murder. And I think that was Catherine Briggs in one of her massive folklore books tells a story. I think his name was Johnny, who again encountered a black dog while he was walking home. Didn't realize that this was anything more than a really large black dog that was walking along with him. Encountered some individuals in the forest. It almost always happens in a dark forest. And they were apparently dissuaded by this large dog, which then disappeared as soon as he was out of the forest. Well, the postscript to that is that these individuals apparently confessed to a minister at some point later in life when they were about to be executed for crimes that aren't really specified, that they had been laying in wait for this young man to do him in. So, you know, the black dog actually saved his life. So there are a number of those kinds of stories out there.
It's interesting how the apparition would know. Let's turn off the self-illuminated eyes, because that will get someone running really quickly away from me.
Yeah, well, not always. Now, sometimes what happens, and this is a circumstance where the black dog takes a more active guardian role. There are a lot of stories where a black dog will appear on a road, and this has happened in the United States too, will appear on and block the road and refuse to let somebody by. And you get a situation where, you know, this individual is trying to get her. There's a wonderful black dog in the Maryland area. So Dahlgren South Mountain Magic records several of these stories. They call their black dog Snarly Yow, which I love that name. But there's a recorded instance where a fellow was walking down the road, and he's, you know, this tough pioneer guy, right? And this black dog, Snarly Yow, appears to him in the road and won't let him pass. And he decides he's just going to whoop that dog's butt. So he lays into this dog, and of course he can't lay a hand on it, right? It's not substantial, but it keeps getting bigger as he tries to get it out of his way. And it holds him up for a considerable period of time and then allows him to walk on. And you're thinking to yourself, well, why on earth would the dog do that? You know, why is it blocking the road? We get some indication of this, of why, in a story from an English cyclist who was actually riding from his little, he was at a dart match. I think it was in Norwich. And he's riding home to his home village in Norfolk. He's cycling down the road, and of course it's dark, and he rides by this huge dog with glowing eyes. And he's like, oh boy, he is not a happy camper, right? He's picking up the pace a little bit. And then he hears this thing padding along behind him. And now he's sure he's going to be mauled from behind, right? The thing pads up past him, it runs past him and stops in the road and won't let him pass. And he's like, okay, you know, he gets off his bicycle and he's holding the bicycle between him and the dog because he figures he's about to get eaten, right? About that time, just a little ways down the road, there's an area of trees and shrubs and so forth. The Brits call them spinneys. Out of this spinney erupts this car. It's driving very erratically and spins up onto the road and takes off another direction. And this fellow says flat out in his testimony, you know what, if I had not been blocked off by this black dog, I would have been killed or seriously injured. This guy would have hit me because I'd have been right there. So we get some idea that, you know, the dog's not always a bad guy.
And what about size? Are they normally, I mean, except for the, you know, that one growing in size, that's a very interesting point I've never heard. But in general, what are the size of these black dogs?
So typically, the black dog is characterized as being enormous. The one exception to the rule that pops into my mind, there's a black dog that's known in Meriden, Connecticut, that's the size of a spaniel. But that was about the only small one that I can remember encountering in my research. Normally, the dog is described as being somewhere around the size of a calf. People have described them as the size of a Newfoundland, if you know that breed. Enormous dog built for rescuing people from the water. Or a Great Dane. I've always thought of them as kind of the size of my Irish wolfhounds. You know, I had wolfers when I was younger. It's typically a very large dog. Some people describe them as being mastiff-like. So we get kind of two different coats. You get one dog that's described as having a very shaggy coat, and you get another dog that's described as having a sort of a smooth coat, which I thought was kind of interesting when you start reading Linda Godfrey's work. The man wolves tend to have the shaggy coat outside, but if you see one indoors, they have that more smooth Anubis type coat. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But in general, it's seen as a very large dog.
A man wolf, like a shapeshifter, essentially?
You know, Linda Godfrey, man wolf, dog man. Some people call him dog man.
Gotcha. Okay.
I always thought that was kind of a, it's not a dog man. It's more of a man wolf, you know, but it's like I have a problem calling Bigfoot Bigfoot. I prefer Sasquatch because it seems kind of disrespectful.
Kind of takes the pun out of it immediately when you call it a Sasquatch, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Poor Biggie. I bet he wouldn't like to be called Bigfoot either. He's like, obvious, but you don't have to call me that.
It's like, hello, at least give me a proper name. Don't just, you know, call me after something that you found on a track trail somewhere.
Well, the problem is, just like if you read an anatomy book and you know parts and pieces and bones, you know, they named it for what it looked like, or what it did, where it was located. You know, we weren't always super creative with our names, but it does help to remember what it is,
right?
Where it, exactly. You know, what it does. So that is a huge problem. Travis, what about maybe one of the early or earliest reports that you came across?
Okay. So the earliest report, if you go back in history, you know, we can start talking about black dogs as early as Anupet in Egypt, which most people would know by the Greek name Anubis. You know, is characterized as a black dog sitting on a pedestal, right? I mean, you see this guy all the time. The Norse had their guardian of the underworld called Garm. The Greeks had Carabas, who was characterized as a large, dusky or black dog with three heads and a serpent tail. So he was really scary looking. But the form that we are talking about seems to have made its debut in a really scary story from August of 1577. Now, keep in mind that this story comes to us from an individual who appears to have been extremely religious, and this whole tract was written as a way of getting people to repent and pray for their salvation, basically. So the black dog in this story gets equated with the devil immediately, which is something I talk about some in the book, too. But the story is that in the village of Bungay, there was, and I'll quote here, a great tempest of violent rain, lightning, and thunder, the like whereof was seldom seen. So there was a really, really nasty storm in progress. And the people of this parish gathered at the local church to pray. Because it was fairly common during that time period for people to think the world was ending when there were natural disasters going on. So that's part of what could have been going on here. Fleming, the guy that wrote this, goes on to say that they were struck with sword and sudden fear, and they were robbed of their right wits. So you had all these people, they were gathered together in the church, they were praying that the world wasn't coming to an end, or maybe they were praying that it was coming to an end, depending on their belief system. And as they prayed, apparently, there suddenly appeared, you know, again, we have that appearing and disappearing without any, you know, transition. Again, I'll quote, "A dog, as they might discern it, of a black color, at the sight whereof, together with fearful flashes of fire, they saw this thing in amidst the congregation." Now, this is one of the few times, and I discuss this pretty extensively in the book, but this is one of the few times where the black dog is actually credited with killing somebody. Because this monster runs back and forth in the church, and two of the kneeling congregants actually just had their necks wrung and died. They strangely died, as Fleming says. I don't know why it's strange that someone would die from having broken neck, but, you know, it's 1577. We'll give them that. Even worse, this black dog apparently gets a hold of another man. He suffers an effect that says that he was drawn together and shrunk up as if he were a piece of leather scorched in a hot fire. Now, that's really weird. And what's even stranger is that he survived this and went on living. I don't know how that worked. I also don't know how a black dog actually managed to get a hold of somebody, because it says it uses the term gripe, which means to grasp something. So this black dog wreaks havoc in this church and then disappears. And later that same day in the town of Blytheburg, a similar beast makes a repeat performance and kills two people in that church. So this is the first legendary stories that we have of the black dog. And I think that these stories account for some of the reason why the black dog's gotten such a bad reputation. I mean, that's kind of its premiere. So as a result, you know, the black dog came to be associated with death and killing people and all that kind of thing because of these stories. Now, the first thing we have to realize about this story is that, you know, the individual who's writing it states flat out that this black dog was the devil. Okay. Now, in other versions of the story that are found in history, it was actually the devil that appeared in this church. So we can be pretty sure that something really strange happened to the people of Bungay and Blytheburg, but we're not so sure that it was a black dog or the type of apparition that we're talking about that actually carried this out. But that is the first appearance of the black dog in lore that I could find. When we start to look at the witness testimony, where people actually claim to have seen the black dog and talked to somebody and said that they saw it, then we're starting to talk to the folklorists of the early 20th century, and those stories extend back into the 1800s. So that's kind of where we are as far as first stories go.
Now, with these couple of stories, with the phantom black dogs appearing inside, how many of those kinds of reports and cases did you come across? Because it seems like you said, it's usually in a dark forest. So these guys were popping up inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, black dogs indoors are not nearly as common as black dogs outdoors. One of the interesting stories that I found, there's a gentleman named Simon Sherwood who runs a blog called Shuckland. He is an academic. He holds a university position, but he studies anomalous experiences. And the reason that he studies anomalous experiences is precisely because he had a black dog experience when he was a child. It happened in 1974. He says that he'd been in bed for a couple of hours and he awoke to hear the patter of feet. He says that he looked up thinking it was his own dog, but, and I'm going to quote here, "To my terror, I saw a massive black animal, probably with horns, but perhaps ears, galloping along the landing towards my bedroom. I tried to scream, but I found it impossible. The creature's eyes were bright yellow and as big as saucers. The animal got to my bedroom door and then vanished as quick as it had appeared. So that's pretty typical of indoor appearances for the black dog. It will appear, and the interesting thing is that you don't have this dog running, you know, through the wall into the house. When the black dog is seen inside, it's seen inside the house, and its whole appearance is in the house, often in somebody's bedroom. So I found that that very interesting. There are, of course, other stories of the black dog indoors. I don't have a note on this one, but I do know that there was a manor house in which the lady of the house was preparing for guests. They had what was called a staghound, which is kind of a hybrid dog, another large dog that's used for hunting deer, something like a Scottish deerhound, which is a slightly smaller, slighter version of an Irish wolfhound. They had a staghound, and this woman saw this dog a black dog running up the stairs to the house and thought that her dog was loose and was going to go up and mess up all the finely made linens upstairs. So she was like not happy and was yelling for her husband to come get the dog and so on and so forth. She ran upstairs and found nothing. She searched the entire upstairs of her home and found no sign of this dog that she had very clearly seen go up the stairs. Her husband comes back into the house shortly thereafter and wants to know what she's carrying on about. And she says, "I saw Psyche," which was their dog, going up the stairs, but I can't find her now. He says, "You're daft, woman. The dog is asleep in the kennel. You know, I just came from there. That wasn't, whatever it wasn't our dog." Now, you might have thought that maybe there was a stray dog loose in the house, but she later has an experience where she's looking out from her bedroom window and sees the same animal leap a hedge that was something like 12 feet tall, flat-footed, and disappear off onto the moor. So we have a pretty good indication that they had a black dog running around their manor house. So, but those instances don't seem to be nearly as, they are frightening to the witness, but they don't seem to be nearly as scary as some of the outdoor, except for one story that I can recall that's detailed in the book.
Travis, did Simon say why he thought he had seen this PBD in the house running towards his bedroom? Was there anything after that he could postulate on why?
He really didn't theorize too much about why he saw this thing. It was more that he was, he found out later that there had been other black dog reports from his area inside homes, and that there'd actually also been a claim of somebody seeing a black goat running around in their home, which is interesting because there's a shape-changing legend about the black shuck that says that they sometimes appear as black goats as well. But there's not a lot of shape-changing lore about the black dog, but there is a little bit. The interesting thing he says, though, is that there were previous reports, and that this really, you know, shaped his academic career and how he wanted to go. Now, I theorize that you know, the Brits are famous for their ley line theory. And I wonder if these houses where dogs are seen sometimes are not on one of these straight tracks that the Brits talk about so much, or if they're not perhaps even at the juncture of one of these a couple of these straight tracks. Their theory is that the energy of the Earth, geomagnetic energy or whatever you want to call it, moves through these lines, something like the meridians in the Chinese medicine system. So, except for the Earth on an Earth level. and that a lot of anomalous experiences happen along these lines or at junctures to these lines, and that a lot of sacred places like Stonehenge and Avebury and those kinds of places in British Isles are at junctures for these ley lines. So, you know, it's an interesting theory and one that I talk about in the book.
Now, I know that you took a deep, deep dive into the PBD phenomenon, but when you were researching that, you were just speaking about ley lines and all sorts of other activity and sightings. Did you come across any reports or cases where there was the PBD along with a UFO or some kind of another cryptid, anything like that?
Yeah. So this is where we start to get into a little bit more, a little less specific cases. The link between black dogs and UFOs is pretty tenuous in my opinion, but there were a couple of cases where black dogs were seen in conjunction with UFOs, and those appear in the Board's Alien Animals. Janet Colin Board wrote a terrific book called Alien Animals that has all kinds of interesting stuff. There's a black dog section. There's one on alien big cats and that sort of thing. But so probably one of the better UFO black dog cases was in 1963 in South Africa. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce these road names because they're Dutch and I'm not even sure how they'd be pronounced.
But I don't blame you a bit.
Yeah. So this happened 14 December 1963. You had two men that were driving along again in the wee hours of the morning, which seems to be a thing. And as they're driving along, they saw something in the road that they at first thought was a buck or a deer or, you know, whatever the equivalent to that would be in Africa, an antelope, something like that. So they turned around to check it out. And when they got back there, what they saw was what appeared to be an exceptionally large dog. Now, one of the things that we find in black dog lore and anomalous lore in general is strange witness reactions, right? So these guys turn around, they take the effort to turn their car around, they go back, they find this exceptionally large dog in the road, and what do? They turn around and they continue along their way. They don't, you know, it's like, oh, look, there's a big dog in the road. Okay, let's go. So they turn their car around. They're going to continue their journey. And all of a sudden, they basically get spotlighted. The whole area becomes brightly illuminated. There's a strange bright object that appears ahead of them and charges the car, basically. It just, you know, comes straight for their car at what they called a terrific speed. They were afraid the object was going to hit the car, so they both jumped out of the car. And as they're standing next to the car on this road, they see this object dive down at their car, then go up and then come back at their car again. Then it stops and hovers for a couple of minutes and then does the typical UFO thing where it shoots off into the sky and disappears. Now, I think that, you know, the link here is a little tenuous. You know, these guys see a big dog and then they see a UFO. Now, it's entirely possible in the world of high strangeness that the two could be related. For all we know, the black dog turned into a bright light and charged their car. We really have no way of knowing. And since we can't interrogate these witnesses, there's no way of really establishing the link there. But the fact is, this large dog, which they don't even really call black, but this large dog was seen, and then there was a UFO right away afterwards. So there's some linkage in people's minds there. The other one is even stranger, and this is one of the few stories in the book that actually doesn't have a black dog in it. In this case, the dog was white, but this story was so strange I had to include it. It was just way too good to miss. So this one happens on the 23rd of August in 1977. The percipient had actually had a UFO encounter exactly 1 year before this happened, to the minute. So at 2:25 a.m., this woman hears someone knocking on her door. She's like, you know, as you would be, you know, puzzled by why anybody would be banging on your door at 2 o'clock in the morning. Me, myself, and I, if someone is banging on my door at 2 o'clock in the morning, would be extremely cautious. But apparently this woman just went downstairs and opened the door. And there is a very large white dog standing on her doorstep staring at her. So again, we get this sort of uncharacteristic reaction. She just closes the door and walks away. The knocking starts up again. She opens the door again. This time there's nothing there. So she's, you know, like, okay, anomalous experience time. I've already had a UFO encounter. Now there's this big white dog staring at me. She goes upstairs, she puts out the lights, and she waits next to her window. Of course, the knocking starts up again. She looks out her window. There's nothing there. Now, the only thing that really links this to a UFO is that the next day, she discovers that there was a UFO reported as flying over her town, you know, during that time of the night. Now, I have to wonder about this one. We know that this woman had already had a UFO encounter. And we know that certain people seem to have either the gift or the curse of having repeat encounters. And that sometimes those encounters go from, you know, simply seeing something in the sky to actually having an encounter with whatever occupies the UFO. We also know that there's, you know, this whole business of screen memories, like Mike Cleland and his owls. So I have to wonder if this large white dog wasn't a screen memory for something else that appeared on her doorstep. We don't have any indication that there was missing time or anything like that, but, you know, there was a UFO in the area. There was a big white dog. Again, the link is very tenuous, but, you know, we have to look at all of these things. So I included this kind of reluctantly in the book because I don't see a clear connection.
Neither does your dog. He's like, I totally agree, Dad.
Yeah, my...
No, that's fine. It was a perfect cameo time, actually. So is there any other cases where you came across the white dog instead of the black dog besides this one?
No. There's one other in the book that talks about a brown dog. And I do mention that particularly in Scotland, there's something called the Cushie, which is a very clearly a fairy hound, which is a different animal altogether. But the Cushie is sometimes seen as being white with green ears, but doesn't relate to our black dog at all because it's not the sightings and so forth of the Cushie are not, they don't fall into the same patterns as our black dog does. So typically our guy is always black. The other exception to that is in Latin America, which I call it Latin America, anything south of the U.S. border. There is something in the Central American region called the Cadejo. And there are two types of dogs, dog apparitions there, one of which is black and is the evil one, and the other which is white and is the guardian one. So they've kind of bifurcated their black dog into a black dog and a white dog. And there's a story in the book about a white dog that protects somebody's family while he's off to school. And then there are several stories about the Cadejo, which is a black dog, which seems to have a particular fondness for people who are drunk and stands guard over them as they're passed out. But the legend is that the Cadejo will cadejo will actually is waiting for the alcoholic to die so that he can take their souls.
Oh, wow.
So
yet another reason to cut back on drinking, right?
Yeah. The Latin American stuff comes to us almost exclusively from a guy named Simon Burchell, who actually was a British fellow who lived in Central America and had a Guatemalan wife. And he wrote a couple of little papers about the black dog in south of the U.S. border, which are very interesting. And, you know, the other interesting thing is that, you know, the black dog in Central America got aligned with the devil almost immediately upon the Spanish invading that area, because they had a god named Tezcatlipoca, which I think translates to smoked mirror, who was a god of chaos and death and that sort of thing, who made his appearance in the human world as a coyote-type creature, which would often block roads. So the Europeans who were familiar with black dog lore associated him with black dogs and the devil almost immediately upon getting to the Central American area.
What is it with the Simons? The Simons are way into the PBD phenomenon, huh? That's the second Simon you've mentioned. That's interesting.
Yeah. There's another really interesting name thing that I ran across. There's the little spaniel-sized black dog of Meriden, Connecticut. And there's also black dog reports from a place called Meriden Island in Wisconsin, which I thought was something that was covered by Linda Godfrey and Chad Lewis. And I picked up some witness testimony from a television show. So I just thought that was interesting that you'd have black dogs in two names. Like, you know, it's like the whole Sasquatch being associated with devil names,
mm-hmm.
which I've always found really interesting too.
Well, Travis, this book is filled with a ton of reports from all over, really, the world, and all it spans hundreds and hundreds of years. But will you, before you go, share a couple of your favorites, I should say, that you came across?
Sure. Probably the best known black dog story out there, other than The Beast of Bungay with all its horror, right? Happened in 1972. Now, the British have a maritime search and rescue division called the Coast Guard, which the Coast Guard in the United States has a number of different functions. The Coast Guard in Britain has one function. It's maritime search and rescue. So this sighting was by a Coast Guard. His name was Graham Grant. His sighting has been detailed in the newspapers. It's been on the British television show Animal X. Anyway, he was on duty at the Gorleston Rescue Headquarters in Norfolk. And he testifies that he was looking north at about 4:45 a.m. at daybreak on Wednesday last, April the 19th. I saw a large black hound-type dog on the beach about a quarter of a mile north of the lookout. What made me look was that the dog was running, then stopping, as if looking for someone. I watched it for 1 to 2 minutes, and then it vanished before my eyes. I kept on looking for a time, but it did not reappear. Now, Graham, you know, this is like a law enforcement type sighting almost. You know, this is a trained observer who saw this animal and then saw it disappear in front of him. This is in Norfolk, where there's extensive lore about the black dog known as the Black Shuck. Graham Grant also notes that the beach had recently been flattened by bulldozers, so there was nowhere for this dog to hide. He had just moved to Norfolk, so he wasn't familiar with the stories of the Black Shuck or the black dog at all. And in fact, he didn't know anything about this until he mentioned his weird sighting to some of his peers. An interesting side note to this is that one of the legendary attributions of the black dog is that it's also associated with storms. shortly after this sighting, a strong northwest gale hit that section of the coastline. So kind of a, I talk about black dogs and storms in one of the chapters of the book too. And there's some reason to believe that they may be associated with storms.
And isn't that interesting? And not to make a weird tie-in, but it just popped into my head, is the fact that when you talk about the missing 411 cases, that a lot of times the second they go to look for somebody, some kind of a massive storm rolls in.
Up,
and
yeah,
and then it covers any tracks that they may have found of the person.
Yeah. Now, my other favorite story is exactly one sentence long. And I call this one the "Why You Shouldn't Shoot at Black Dog" story. And this comes from Ethel Rudkin, who, as I said, is one of the seminal folklorists who actually deals with this subject. And the story is this, and I quote, "Sam Prettywell," who she notes is now dead, "once shot at it," referring to a black dog, "against the big willow tree. And his gun barrel busted, and he came home white as a sheet." So apparently this fellow opened fire on a black dog, and his gun blew up, which really makes you think.
That'll teach him.
Because typically, you know, our black dog passes through life without really affecting anything. He doesn't leave tracks. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't leave paw marks or any of that sort of thing. But he does sometimes have some physical effects like this. There's a South American story that's kind of similar to this one, where a gentleman is you know, trying to evade the local militia because he's carrying a weapon he shouldn't be. And he encounters a black dog that scares him so bad, he pulls his .38 out and he fires at it. And the bullet comes out of the end of the gun and falls to the ground. Now, instead of running away in panic, this fellow fires at the dog again. And the same thing happens. The bullet comes out of the end of the gun and falls to the ground. So our black dog can have a physical effect on things when it chooses to, apparently. But I included several firearm stories in the book. You know, generally, the dog is just not affected by firearms at all. So those are a couple of my favorites.
Just like the wolf's out at Skinwalker Ranch, you know, one of the original stories.
I talk about
out there.
That in the conclusion to the book. Exactly. You know, you have these, in fact, Skinwalker Ranch, the book, Colm Kelleher and George Knapp's book, includes a section later on after that big wolf appears at the beginning of the story and is impervious to firearms. I always get their names confused. They go by Gorman in the book, but I think their actual name was Sherman. Mrs. Sherman is coming home from work and encounters the same humongous wolf thing, right, as she's driving in. And behind it is a large black dog. And then later in that book, there's also an encounter with, you know, another mystery creature that looks something like a dog that they fire on, again, has absolutely no effect. So our black dog even pops up at Skinwalker Ranch, which I thought was interesting, you know, being a real hotspot sort of place.
Isn't that something, though? Like, the massive wolf isn't enough. You have the phantom black dog along with it, just high-fiving each other. I mean, come on.
It's like, yeah, let's see if we can scare the crap out of these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They haven't gone through enough with their dream property out here.
Yeah. We haven't messed with your life enough and caused you to lose a bunch of cattle and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, now we're going to just scare the crap out of you for fun. Yeah.
You never need sleep again. You're fine.
After reading that book, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, let me at it. And a part of me that's like, I don't know.
You know what?
A little.
You just had the perfect segue to my last question, because you're like, I don't know about Skinwalker Ranch, which I totally agree with, because there was a lot of wonky stuff going on. But after everything you've learned about phantom black dogs, would you be worried about seeing one? Would you want to see one?
Yeah, I'd be totally okay with it because I'm not one of those portent of doom people. I mean, yeah, there is that small probability that it could be a death portent, but you know, it's just as likely to be something that appears to me to keep me from, you know, getting run over by a car or something, so, or mugged by people on the street. So I would be totally okay with seeing one. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, I mean, it is one of those situations where when you encounter a black dog, often, you know, we get that same kind of terror reaction that people get in Sasquatch sightings or sometimes they'll get with, UFO sightings, any of those kinds of things where people have that kind of unreasoning terror reaction. I mean, I guess if in the best of all possible worlds, I'd like to have a little range between me and the black dog, but, you know, from a logical standpoint, I don't think I would be that afraid of it. I don't see it as, you know, being a complete portent of doom. And it's like, oh my God, I'm going to die or somebody in my family is going to die or whatever. I mean, there's always that possibility, but it's more likely to be a guardian than anything else from what I've seen.
I think the difference between seeing it, you know, out in a field or as Graham did, you know, running along a shoreline somewhere versus running at you toward your bed while you are in that bed may be a little different. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you see the same thing, though, in Linda Godfrey's Man-Wolf stories, you know, it's like, or Dogman stories, whichever you prefer. You know, you have this critter outside and he tends to be a little more aggressive than, say, our black dogs or Sasquatches or whatever for the most part. And he'll chase people, you know, you're like, oh, crap. But you notice he never catches anybody. And we see something like that with the black dog too. Every once in a while, a black dog will chase somebody, but doesn't catch them. You know, might scare the bejesus out of them, but he doesn't catch them. Nothing happens to them. So, you know, yeah, I mean, there's a difference when you start talking range. You know, I'm not sure that I'd want to stand eye to eye with one unless I was sure that it was there to make sure that something bad didn't happen to me. But, you know, I mean, you pay your money and you take your chances.
It would be pretty awesome, though, to be riding them around like the wargs in, you know, Lord of the Rings or something like that. You know, you could train them. That'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, I will leave that one to you. I'm not sure I would want to try to put a bridle on one.
Yeah, they may not favor such a thing. You know, put it here. It's just a bit. You'll be fine. I don't think
so. There you go. Here, puppy.
Yeah.
And there are some stories where people encounter these critters on the road and go to try to pet them. And their hand falls through them. And they're like, oh, wait. So what do? You try to pet the dog again,
oh,
right?
Come on.
and the hand falls through again. And you realize, oh, wait, maybe that's not a real dog.
Mm.
Or the kind of dog that I want to pet. Yeah.
That's why this is such an awesome book, because there is the stories and the difference in these encounters are limitless.
Oh, thanks. I really, you know, there is a lot of black dog lore out there. There are websites, there are books, there are, you know, all kinds of resources. And I include a lot of that stuff in the bibliography to the book. But what I really wanted to do was write a good introduction to this topic, where people were exposed to what the black dog was, you know, what locations it was liable to be seen in, some of the weird stuff that happens around black dogs, like that whole appearing and disappearing thing and the impervious to firearms thing, and even the tenuous association with UFOs. And then I wanted to present some theories about the black dog. So that's what I set out to do, and I think I accomplished that.
Well, Travis, who, remember everyone, writes under W.T. Watson, please let everyone know where they can find both of your books and any social media plugs that you need to do. Now is the time.
Okay. Well, as far as where the books can be found, I think you could probably answer that better than I can, but they're available where, you know, where fine books are sold. You know, Amazon, I'm assuming Nook and those kinds of things. So I'm also available. You know, I continue to do research, and I'm working on another book right now, which I'm going to keep secret for a little bit because, you know, I think it's kind of an original idea, and I really want to plug it at the right time.
Oh yeah, but we're not spilling a single bean of those beans right now.
Yeah. So you can find me under WT Watson on Facebook, on Twitter, where I'm WT Watson 2. You can find me on Instagram under an old handle. It's Couriner 60, but I think that if you search WT Watson, you can find me that way too. Again, the book's available on Kindle, and I hope that people really enjoy it. I come at this topic from a little bit different standpoint than maybe some other cryptozoological or Fortean people do, since I have a lot of exposure to shamanic perspectives, even magical perspectives, and I include some of that theory in the books, in the book.
Well, Travis, thank you so much for coming on, and I'm looking forward to your next work, and I'll have you back on for that one.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for having me on, and wish all of your readers good night, or your listeners, I guess, good night.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bark. The Buddhist says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes. And consulting our memories. But then there's a real evil, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are.
Thank you. T.S. Eliot has the same idea in his poem, The Four Quartets, where he says, when you settle down in the train to read your newspaper and so on, you are not the same person who a little while ago left the platform. If you think you are linking your moments up in the chain. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. A master will say to somebody, now get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big.